Okay, I'm back. Shut up already. Welcome. This is Ask an Atheist with me. Yes, me, Sam Alvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. It's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. And yes, it's me. I'm back. But for a brief time only. I appreciate all the kind words everybody's sending. It's just been a very busy couple months for me. I've got a lot of projects with Foundation Beyond Belief and some personal stuff going on that I need to wrap up. So yeah, I'm letting other people take the reins for a while, but I did want to come in and say hey for a little bit and say, I'm not dead! This is not like a Beatles thing. Joining me today, as usual, is the lovely Becky. How are you?
I've been here the whole time.
Yeah, where'd you go? Yeah, nowhere. You've been here. And Dan, how's it going?
The walrus was Mike.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fan fiction, please. So you wanted to talk about Saran Wrap or something, right? That's what you were telling me in the pre-show?
Yeah. Not really, but you know, yeah, why not? You're throwing out suggestions for random topics, and it's just the first one that came to
mind. If we were going to talk about Saran Wrap, this would get radio unsafe pretty quickly, even though we're not on the radio. So
really?
Moving on, Montana Governor Steve Bullock signed an executive order expanding the state's anti-discrimination protections. The new order prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity for employment with the state. The order also applies to companies contracting with the government. Bullock said he was honoring the principles fought for by Dr. Martin Luther King in a statement Monday, MLK Day. The order also expands protection based on military service, pregnancy, genetic information, and medical conditions, which I think is cool. I mean, you know, hooray Montana, the state with the motto, "Wah, we can't please anybody." I mean, seriously, they're known for being, they're kind of hickish. They got this really negative reputation with some people, which is positive with some other people or whatever. And then they regularly do stuff like this. I've been through it a couple times now. A state I never thought I'd get up to before I moved up here, by the way, because it always seemed like weird and far away to my Midwestern mind. And I've been through it now. It's lovely.
It's a beautiful drive. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm wondering about when we're going to start hearing the backlash on this particular executive order.
Oh, I'm certain it's already begun. Right?
I mean, here in Washington, we just actually had, as of January 1st, I believe, protections for people based on their gender identity.
Yeah.
Allowing people to use the bathroom that corresponds to the gender that they identify with. And, oh boy, has that ruckus already started.
Yeah.
So I'm figuring that you're going to have someone that says your anti-discrimination order wasn't voiced by the people and violates my particular religious conscience. So the bottom line, in my opinion, is that someone's, right to not be discriminated against based on their gender identity has no bearing on how you personally practice your religion.
Dan, Becky, you guys are the checkbook, okay? And I'm the pitch man here, all right? So let me run this idea past you and let me know what you think, all right?
All right.
You know, you guys know my reputation. I've had a couple winners. It's a thing.
All right, Becky, ice water.
Ice water. Okay. So here's the thing. All right, so we pass a new piece of legislation that that doesn't discriminate against people, and it'll say things like military service, pregnancy, genetic information, medical conditions, sexual orientation, gender identity, whatever, and also bigotry. What do you think?
I can't discriminate against someone based on their own bigotry?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess fair's fair. I think it comes back to the whole freedom of speech idea. Like, absolutely, you have freedom of speech, but not necessarily from the repercussions of your speech, except when it comes to legal action.
Is this sheet a winner or not?
I'm going to vote.
Will this play in Peoria?
I'm going to vote this down.
Of course it'll play in Peoria. There's a ton of bigots there.
I'm voting this one down, Sam.
It's one of the things that is inevitably going to come up, which is, it's freedom of speech until I say something politically incorrect. And I hate that because you're allowed to say what you like. If you want to, if you want to be a jackass, be a jackass till the cows come home. But it's not just what you're saying. It's the fact that you're moving against legislation that gives other people the right to, not be a jackass and buy food or have a job or drive a car and things like that. So,
yeah, personally, I have a distaste for bigotry. but I also have a policy
on you and the controversial statements. Man.
I know. But my personal policy on bigotry, I have snatched from the bigots themselves. My policy on bigotry is don't ask, don't tell. Yeah. I don't care if you're a bigot as long as I never find out. You can do what you want in the privacy of your own home. You know what two consenting jerks talk about in the privacy of their own home is none of my business. But you know, you take it to work or take it to school or take it to the public sphere.
Or the legislature, perhaps.
Or the legislature. And I'm going to have to start to develop feelings about it. But honestly, I don't want to judge anybody on the thoughts that are going through their head unspoken, because goodness knows I have some horrible thoughts that I never put to voice.
Yeah, if I was going to be judged on my unspoken thoughts, I would be on death row. I mean, and I don't know that that's not going to be true for a lot of people.
I don't care what you are if you never let me know that you are a bigot.
Right.
So, Sam, am I to understand that you're anticipating that folks who wish to discriminate based on their own religious ideas will advance or try and advance a bill protecting their religious bigotry against others?
Are you suggesting this has not already happened?
Montana is, after all, the place that not 1 year ago an actual legislator mused about banning yoga pants or tight-fitting clothes that would have the outline of someone's bum.
I was thinking about that. I'm like, nah, that can't be Montana. That's got to be somewhere else. But it was Montana.
Oh, yes. It was musing about, you know, anything that mimics the appearance of someone's genitalia or buttocks. We can't have them wearing skin-tight things. It was ridiculous.
So In one of the few remaining states where there are actual legit cowboys, was he seriously talking about outlawing cowboy jeans? Like tight form-fitting pants?
Well, on women,
because I mean that's a men and women thing, and there's a reason, because you don't want, you know, loose bagginess when you're in the saddle, because it's going to chafe on you every time you bounce. This could rapidly get out of hand, but the point is, I mean, it's like going to Philadelphia and banning personal protective equipment for steel mills. Like, that's just a terrible idea.
Well, only if
we're not going to do hard hats or heat reflective shielding anymore. It's just obscene.
It's like, only if the hard hats really, really turn you on and make you think impure thoughts. I'm sure that there are plenty of people for whom hard hats are a turn on.
Well, really, so congratulations, Montana, and congratulations specifically to the governor of Montana for realizing that humans beings actually have, you know, rights and stuff here in the United States. Well done. And you know that sounds like short selling it, but no, expanding it when they don't have to, that I should be honest. Expanding it when they're not forced to by the federal government, that is a thing. That is definitely worth, you know, congratulating somebody for.
I can't help but wonder whether this will have any impact on Montana's regulations regarding reproductive health.
Yeah.
Montana is a very rural state, very spread out, and it's known for having health clinics, reproductive health clinics that are few and far between. And so I can't help but wonder whether the protection against discrimination based on pregnancy status might be able to be applied to women seeking health care, especially abortion care.
That's a fairly good point.
I'm sure that it'll help women who are, you know, discriminated against in the job, you know, in the workplace with in terms of government contracts.
Unless you just said this in another way and I'm just being dense today. And doesn't there also a confluence with hospital ownership in this situation as well?
I don't know at this point, but this does refer to employment with the state and state agencies and contractors. So I imagine that if the hospitals, even if it's a religious hospital, religiously affiliated hospital, if it does do any kind of contract work with the state, mm-hmm. there would be implications for that.
All right. Honest question, guys, about this particular thing, because I believe it also exists in the Washington law against discrimination, where it mentions medical conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Is there other law that says that you can't use this to say, yeah, I know I have typhoid, but that doesn't take away my right to slop out mashed potato?
I think that that's not quite what they mean by medical conditions. And but I'm sure that the actual legislation...
The weird thing about ambiguous laws is that these kinds of things can happen when laws are left ambiguous. And I kind of worry, you know, because is that not a genuine concern of mine?
Well, this is a state legislation, but people who are going to be serving food are going to be under federal FDA regulation. So it probably wouldn't matter in the case of slopping out potatoes, because you'd still be in violation
of federal
laws.
Okay, so it is a dumb question. Awesome.
Well, Not necessarily. I'm sure it could apply to other things. I'm just specifically addressing the typhoid potato concern.
Typhoid potato.
Potato's Idaho, anyway. Don't give Montana credit for the potatoes.
In Montana, we only make cows. No potatoes.
Actually, a lot of potatoes are grown in Washington State, too.
You get your meat in Montana, your potatoes in Idaho, and your liberal politics everywhere else. No.
Actually, going back to the very beginning of this conversation... hey, Dustin, what's up? I was talking about how Montana was like this faraway, exotic place to me. You know what else was? The Pacific Ring of Fire.
Oh, yeah. And now you're like...
I'm on it.
You're not just on it. You're inside of it. Yeah. Like, it goes around the other side of this particular domicile.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're in the ring. You are
I'm in the ring. I'm in the Ring of Fire.
You are in the Ring of Fire.
You know, love is a burning thing.
Love is a burning thing.
Yeah. I don't know where to go with this, to be honest with you.
I think we should just drop it. I'm cashing out of this one.
Hey-o! It has been a while, hasn't it? Oh, man. Man, Dan, back in the saddle again. Here we go.
Wearing his jeans.
I would like to thank, very quickly, Eric of San Jose, California, for meeting Peggy's challenge. Peggy's challenge is the challenge of Peggy from Kent to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. You go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, take you right to our page. So we'll go into a break, and when we come back, there's a lot going on with secular organizations that I think we need to talk about, you know? Should be cool.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Toll free nationwide. Wow, that was pretty natural. That felt pretty good. How about we get to some news within the community? The Secular Coalition for America has announced Larry T. Decker as their new executive director. Decker, who describes himself as an unaffiliated Christian, has extensive experience working in Washington and has spent years working with groups like the Red Cross and the Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. Wow, that's actually a really good group name that I just cannot do. The SEA has had trouble recently with their last director, Edwina Rogers, being fired and then suing the organization for wrongful termination and defamation. The SEA has consistently denied the allegations. Decker says that he wants to focus on bringing together all of the nation's nuns as a single voting bloc.
And this would be nuns, not the nuns Catholic with an women O, yes. in habits. But N-O-N-E-S, those who have no particular religion, no particular affiliation.
Absolutely. So the first piece of advice I got on doing this one actually did come from Dan. And you said we should refer to it by its full name at all times. The
Coalition. Yes, Secular Coalition for America.
The Secular Coalition for America. And my answer was like, half my jokes would go away if I did that.
Yeah, the nuns in the other SCA are rather a comedic bunch.
Yeah, I honestly think the world would be a much better place if both SCAs I was familiar with and had worked with in the past just worked together as one group.
I think there's also one that makes paper products.
I think there is, too. Yeah.
But the one you're referring to, though, is the Society for Creative Anachronisms?
Yes, indeed. Uh-huh. That is the one I'm talking about. And it would be great if people with, like, wearing foam armor and foam swords and dressed up in period garb and also homebrewers and also people in business suits, like, descended upon Washington en masse and tried to get legislation passed, much as, you know, in the olden times, battles used to take place by just two groups of people showing up and said, hey, let's have a fight.
All right.
I think that'd be great.
For the record, I'm going to have to correct on the foam armor and foam swords. That's more of a LARP thing. The SCA was heavier. Heavier armor and wooden weapons, that kind of thing.
Well, it was rattan. It was padded rattan, wasn't
not
it?
Not padded.
No. Oh, okay. No. All right. I've seen him use padding once.
Wrapped in tape, but not padded. And the tape is so that it doesn't splinter apart.
Fair enough.
Former SCA heavy fighter here.
Big surprise.
Yep. Took one too many hits in the head. Now I like science.
You're suggesting that's related.
No.
I
always liked science.
So you could be a former SCA heavy fighter, which would mean clad in leather and using wooden tape-wrapped swords, and become a future SCA heavy fighter, which would consist of you dressed in a suit knocking on legislators' doors.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And if it's...
I don't know how to determine a heavy Secular Coalition for America fighter from a light Secular Coalition for America. In the other SCA, we used a red arrow.
Wow.
I think they use a red A in this case.
Oh, yeah, there we go. There we
Hey-o!
Go. The red A's are the lights, then. If one of them knocks on your door, you don't have to argue with them. You just go, light, you're dead, and they turn around and walk away because it's an honor system.
This is interesting that the SCA...
Oh, if it's
secular...
not clear, I was less involved with the weapons and more involved with the brewing, the drinking, and the craft work. Specifically, Autobahn. Autobahn was great. Anyway, moving on.
Thanks, Sam. So the Secular Coalition for America, we're there now. We're in D.C. at this point.
Yeah, okay.
It's interesting in that it was founded by people that were outwardly atheists and heads of groups that were outwardly atheist or humanist or non-theist.
Yeah, there's a problem here where it just seems like the folks who hire people at the SCA need to talk to the people who fire folks at the SCA. Because there used to be, you know, they had a problem with somebody else who had a interesting affiliation in the past. And that turned out terribly, and she went kind of weird about it. I have no issue saying that. And it seems strange that they're kind of returning back to that old sawhorse for their next leader.
In terms of someone who you would not expect to be associated with atheists,
right. And I just wonder what the thinking behind that is. Like, the way I might do it is, I've actually read some stuff that this guy wrote online. Seems like a great guy. I think he's a good fit for the organization. But when we talk about people within the secular community who are good at lobbying and working political systems, our list is Michael Dodora, as far as I can tell.
And this is Michael Dodora of the Center for Inquiry, who works with the United Nations as the nonpartisan, it's like a nonpartisan NGO kind of advisory group.
Yeah, the SCA is absolutely right. We need this guy's skills. They need to bring him in so that he can raise a huge galactic army to destroy, he can actually train a bunch of people to be effective at lobbying like, he basically needs to treat, I would say, treat the SEA like a classroom for lobbying, where they can get people who are interested in the concepts that the SEA have access in Washington, how to get access in Washington, how to talk to legislators. I'm saying they need this guy's skills and they need him in charge, but I think it needs to be a lot more advisory than executive director.
So have an executive director be a recognizable face?
Yeah, I guess the SCA is concerned. I mean, is the SCA concerned that they're being viewed as an atheist organization?
I would imagine so.
I think they got to stop worrying about that.
Yeah, it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be great if there were atheist organizations that also that people who are okay to say that they're atheist and then were okay to work with, say, the American Humanist Association or something
right.
like that as another for instance.
I mean, you can see the Christian Coalition puts it right there in their name. There's no question of their particular religious affiliation.
I understand wanting to be squirrely on that, you know, about not wanting to come out immediately and say atheistsdestroythings.org, given the history in the Christian end of things, but...
But is there anyone who would join the Secular Coalition for America that is not an explicitly non-theistic or atheistic organization? Would there be something like an environmental group that would join the SCA?
Yeah.
Or a healthcare advocacy organization that would join the SCA? I don't think so at this point, and I don't know that hiring a loosely affiliated ethnic Christian would invite a healthcare organization to do that, even though healthcare organizations have a huge, huge stake in secular laws and protecting the separation of church and state.
Yeah. And I just want to make it very clear, especially to the people who, you know, at the SCA, who we've worked very closely with some of them. This guy sounds great. I don't really have a problem with him personally. I think he will do a good job with the SCA. They're not even concerns. I wonder at things. I guess that is how I would put it. Does that make sense?
No. I recall something recently. I don't even remember if we addressed this on the show or not, but someone in the NAACP was like not black enough or something like that. And it was like a controversy. And I wonder if you know, maybe having any sort of like an objection to this person being executive director is comparable to that.
Yeah.
That then maybe they're not secular enough because they identify as a Christian. But also, I don't want to be the person that goes down that road because, you know, one of the things that I sort of take.
That's a very good question. Am I making a not secular enough argument? And
are you worried that someone who affiliates as a Christian will not be a good advocate on your behalf, Sam?
No.
Okay.
Actually, no.
Okay.
No, not at all. And I guess that's what I'm saying. My concern is building a generational infrastructure of effective people lobbying in Washington, D.C. on behalf of atheists and humanists. And I guess maybe I need to read more because he's already addressed this. Strikes me as the kind of thing that would be forefront in somebody's mind. Maybe I just need to approach them. Maybe I should do that. That might be a good thing to do. I'll be honest, I was planning on doing it anyway. But for the purposes of the narrative, let's pretend I just thought of that now. Moving on, speaking of the Center for Inquiry, the Center for Inquiry and the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science have agreed to merge into a single group. According to a statement, the two organizations will merge under the CFI name, with the RDF becoming a division of the CFI. The CEO of the RDF, Robin Blumner, did I get that wrong? Robin Blumner will take over as CEO of the combined group. The merger will make the CFI the largest secular group in the United States. Once the merger is complete in the spring, Richard Dawkins and other members of his group's board will join the board of directors of CFI. So I think we all know who forms the head in this particular Voltron.
I'm not sure at that point.
Really?
Yeah, you have an executive director and you have a board of directors. I think Richard Dawkins is preeminent in his field of biology for sure. He has proven to be a controversial figure in the world of secularism.
Especially when limited to 140 characters.
One might say, one might agree, but here's
one
the thing.
One might tweet.
You do have, as you said, a Voltron, which is a sum of many parts.
Yeah.
So even if you have a head, right, you have, even if there is a smartphone in front of this person with Twitter attached to it, you have a large group of people. You have two groups that have a long history. Actually, I mean, CFI has a very long history, several decades in the United States of doing this kind of work. And to look at the combined efforts when the visions and missions of both organizations were very, very, very similar, I think that that's a really good alliance. I mean, having spoken and worked with Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science folks over the past 4 years, we see that Dawkins, who is a Brit, was tremendously alarmed by the state of science education and science acceptance in the U.S.
As hence, well he should be.
Hence the founding of his organization. And when you look at, well, there is another organization that's longstanding, well-established, well-financed, or well-enough financed, that has a similar vision and is already addressing that. It makes sense to combine forces.
So does this seem like a... this seems like a pretty good thing to me. I mean, I think I've always been a little bit concerned at sort of the nearly immediate balkanization of a lot of efforts in the atheism and humanism communities. And this seems like a big step away from that. I don't know that it dilutes anybody's efficacy by doing it this way. It seems like it's better than it could be. I don't know.
I think in general, I'm for pooling resources, especially when it comes to scientific inquiry, scientific education.
Yeah.
That, you know, the more of us that are on the same page, the better. The only thing I really worry about in this one is that let's not beat around the bush, among many groups of people, Richard Dawkins is thought of as, you know, this older guy who may be a little bit bigoted or old-fashioned in his
beliefs.
Let's
be honest. He Grandpa Simpsons it sometimes.
He Grandpa Simpsons it sometimes. He does.
Yeah.
He does. You know, I don't follow the man on Twitter. I'm less concerned. You know, I think, as I mentioned earlier with the whole don't ask, don't tell thing, I'm less concerned with the offensive things that he said than I am with the science that he propagates.
Right.
But occasionally we're approaching the card line. So I worry that this could maybe cause people who previously had some great respect for the Center for Inquiry to doubt their motivations for allying with a controversial figure.
Well, on that score, I mean, if we're being honest, the CFI does not exactly have a unblemished reputation on that score either.
We have explored that in the past, but something that we have explored also about the Center for Inquiry is two tremendously important, in my view, arms and branches of the Center for Inquiry. One we've already referenced with Michael Dodora as head lobbyist, who is working specifically with the UN, including other groups. I understand for the last 2 years he's actually head of this particular committee. And the other one is CSI Transnational with its international efforts. And it really was quite amazing to see some of the very, very small actions that can have huge impacts that CFI has been responsible for. And in looking at, you have an organization in India that is looking at women who have been shunned because of their particular religious status, and they've been sex workers. And what do they need in order to be retrained into job production? They need a motorbike. The organization needs a motorbike to get people around. Mm-hmm. That's a $500 donation, and there it is, and it changes the world.
That was Bill Craig, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my all time favorite interviews, and that was because just from the information gathered,
back in 2013, interviewing Bill Cook of the Center for Inquiry, and it's a small part of their budget, but making a huge impact for specific communities.
But a lot of it may be a part of their effective budget, but the infrastructure the rest of their budget provides makes a lot of that kind of stuff possible. So I mean, you can't just say, oh, it's just a little bit of their budget. The story is a little bit more complex than that. And the thing is, there's a lot of great stuff going on at both these organizations, despite some of the internet fighting that we all know and we all love and we all have opinions on. But I think this is all good. And I, speaking of internet fandango that we all know we all love, I always feel like when we talk about organizations and I ask questions like the questions I'm asking in this interview, there's got to be something I don't know. That some of these questions are going to be answered with, well, you're just ignorant on this, Sam. And so if I am, in fact, ignorant on some of these things, please inform me. I would absolutely love it. Go to askanatheist.tv. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. If you think there's if I think there's something going on that I really should know about, I want to know about it. And speaking of things that I want to know about, there's something going on the other end of the state right now, isn't there, Becky?
Yeah, in about 2 weeks, we've got Humanists of the Palouse that is putting on a Darwin Day event. And we've had Darwin Day here in Western Washington for a little while, and it's, you know, it's a pretty fun event. I mean, you've been in the Seattle Darwin Day.
Absolutely.
I have been in the Seattle. Oh, sorry, Darwin Day, yes.
Yeah.
We've both done it. Yeah.
No, it was a great time. When I was there, I was affiliated with Camp Quest Northwest, mm-hmm. Doing some science education, and yeah, I guess sort of a little bit of like a daycare / instructor kind of roles. And
yeah, I was there when I was working with when I was on the board of Seattle Atheists, mm-hmm. And it's Darwin Day is. I think it can be one of the most effective things that local, like things like Darwin Day, but Darwin Day specifically, once upon a time I had a problem with it because it seems like we're venerating, people could just go, oh, hey, Darwin's your guy. But
right.
No, it's...
they do that anyway.
They're going to do that, yeah. They're going to do that anyway, so who cares? And it's an amazing opportunity to educate people. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to have a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Eastern Washington and get in some emails and talk about playgrounds.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Okay, I'm back after a break, and I'm not all here yet, I'll be honest with you. But when we went into the break, we were talking about Darwin Day-like events, and there is one coming up, is there not, Becky?
Yes, before Seattle Atheists host Darwin Day on December 14th, we have Humanists of the Palouse and Washington State University's Secular Student Association, or Secular Student Alliance. They are holding the 5th annual Darwin on the Palouse event on Saturday, February 6th at 6:30 p.m., at the Washington State University CUB Junior Ballroom in Pullman, Washington. Historian Dr. Richard Carrier will be presenting Ancient Roman Creationism, Scientific Pagans versus Armchair Christians, and Glenn Branch of the National Center for Science Education will present After Kitzmiller, What's Next for Creationism. Darwin on the Palouse is open to the public and admission is free. For more information, visit darwinonthepalouse.org.
And man, if you like the brainy stuff, catch a Richard Carrier talk. It's pretty high test brain stuff. I like it when I've liked his talks I've seen.
I'm not familiar with Glenn Branch of the National Center for Science Education, but we've talked with folks from the organization, and looking at after Kitzmiller, what's next for creationism? We're talking about Kitzmiller in Pennsylvania, which was the court case that determined that, yes, indeed, trying to teach the controversy is actually promoting religion in the science classroom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm kind of, is teach the controversy still the favorite playing card, or is there a new trump card, if you will, out there?
Trump card. There is indeed a trump card out there, and it's approaching the card line. No, it's way over the card line. No, talking about politics on the show. Where were we?
Kitzmiller, creationism, teach the controversy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, teach the controversy was a thing, and I think it's a thing that has sort of gone out of fashion until they find a new thing to call it. Because, I mean, before it was, we have to teach the Bible in schools. We have to teach our religion in schools. You know what? Let's come back 20 years later and just teach intelligent design. We'll try to sneak it in there. And now it's gone to, well, intelligent design is you know, we're not going to teach that because it's not science. So let's teach the controversy. Well, guess what? The controversy only exists on one side of the argument. As far as biological scientists are concerned, there's no controversy about evolution.
Right.
With maybe one or two exceptions.
So this might be a little hacker me in the corner here, but given that Teach the Controversy is already pretty well, it seems like it's a TV show. It's like the later seasons of House. Maybe I'm the only guy watching it. So there's a vacuum here. There doesn't seem to be a thing that's bringing the people together. So why don't we come up with one?
Ooh.
And try to sneak it in there, and then engineer the situation properly.
What I was sort of getting at is, I expect in another few years they'll come up with another way of rephrasing the same argument and just doing it. But if we could do it first and really wedge it in there good, and then break it open and be like, nah, this is all crap.
Ta-da!
maybe it won't happen again. So let's see. Instead of intelligent design, maybe we could go for
inefficiently engineered. No, because that has an embedded insult.
Inapplicable thermodynamics.
Inapplicable thermodynamics. Wow.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. It almost has special pleading built in.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you.
One thing that's actually quite alarming that comes along with any kind of denial of science, be it evolution or anthropogenic climate change, is the co-opting of the word skeptic and skepticism.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, that's definitely back in...
And so what you're starting to see is these academic freedom bills trying to be promoted in legislatures that look at the ability for a teacher to have academic freedom to explore views that are skeptical of what is commonly promoted. So it's co-opting words like academic, and co-opting words like skepticism, and co-opting words like freedom. I mean, freedom, anyone's going to jump on that wagon, right?
Even the cabbages.
But you look at something like academic, and it's trying to hit at what has been historically denigrated as something reserved for the elites. Mm. And you look at skepticism, which might tempt or draw in or begin to draw in new people that are sort of exploring agnosticism and skepticism from a scientific and logical perspective and philosophical perspective, to say, well, I am a skeptic about the data and how it's presented about climate change. I am a skeptic about how one finger bone could actually fill in a line or fill in a little branch on our tree of evolution.
Sure.
So that's something that I've noticed that's pretty alarming.
Yeah.
Let's go with inapplicable thermodynamics.
Inapplicable thermodynamics, yes. Or there's a show that I like that has a character that is a skeptic, quote unquote, of anything that denies the supernatural. I think it's phrased in the term of, as a skeptic of mortality myself, I've long questioned the non-belief in ghosts. You know,
right. It's like the people who call them like moon landing skeptics.
Right.
No, you're not a moon landing denier.
Yes.
Yeah. That I like the way, I know a lot of people say it shouldn't be denier, but I like denier. It's here is evidence. No, don't care.
Nope.
Yeah.
No. Don't want to see your evidence. My idea is right.
So we'll see what's next for creationism after Kitzmiller.
This all sounds pretty cool. Speaking of things that are slightly less cool, a Washington state lawmaker asked a group of high schoolers if they were virgins. Representative Mary Dye was holding a meeting with the Teen Council chapter of Planned Parenthood when she suddenly asked if they were virgins and suggested that one of them was not. The students were a part of Planned Parenthood's Teen Lobby Day and had come from Eastern Washington to advocate for birth control and expanded health coverage. After a chaperone told the kids that they didn't need to answer the question, Dye lectured the students on her opinions about sex. Dye issued a statement apologizing for the incident. So I would like to, for one, congratulate and thank this, what is this person's name?
Mary Dye.
Representative Mary Dye for educating these kids that when you go to a legislative session, you're going to run into a pile of assholes. Thank you. This is terrible. So my first thought on this, Becky, is if right out of the gate, when you told this to me, I was like,
are you a virgin, Sam?
Why are you asking? What are you doing Thursday?
Takes one to know one.
And then you call the cops.
Right.
Because you are being propositioned.
I'm pretty sure this is sexual harassment to
a
minor.
It absolutely is sexual harassment to a minor. And it's hard to get better evidence than in the congressional or in the legislative record.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
are you all virgins? I bet you're not. Wink, wink.
Jeez. There's nothing about this that isn't gross.
So it gets.
Well, okay, no. There is one thing about this that isn't gross.
What's that?
Planned Parenthood's Teen Lobby Day. That's not gross.
It is pretty amazing. It's saying, hey, you know what? Let's train you up in how to be advocates for your particular position to your elected officials.
Yeah.
Right.
And coming all the way from Eastern Washington is pretty amazing. Here's another thing that gets worse, that gets more gross. You know, this little brief concluded that Dye issued a statement apologizing for the incident. We know what kind of apology that consisted of, right? Can you guys guess it right now?
I'm going to go with sorry, not sorry.
There's an if embedded in that apology.
Oh.
Okay.
Can I guess?
Yes, go ahead.
I am sorry if anything I said offended you.
How did you guess,
Dan? Wait. No. I am sorry if you were offended by anything I said, because you gotta put blame fully on the other party, right?
Yeah. The other thing that was a hilarious component of this apology is, you know what? On reflection, I realized that I was speaking in a rather motherly tone. She said something to that effect. That it
wow,
wasn't.
If that's your motherly tone, I despair for your children.
Well, she said that she was speaking as someone who. Whose opinions were informed by both her mother and being a mother of three daughters.
Huh.
Yeah, I feel sorry for them. Also, yeah, so I'm trying to look up her apipolyology, and all I see is literally the sentence, if anything I said offended them or made them feel uncomfortable, I apologized. You don't need that if. You asked them if they were virgins
right.
on the floor of the freaking legislature.
And you don't get to decide whether what you said was offensive or not.
You basically,
once you've said it and people were offended, you have to accept that what you said offended people. I'm sorry if you were offended. No. I'm sorry I offended you.
Yeah.
That's how you start this.
Or just straight out, I'm sorry I asked a completely inappropriate question
right.
to minor children trying to be involved in the political process. I support your efforts to come out here, and I really invite you to continue your journey onto political involvement. That's an apology.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if I were a person involved with this, I'd, all the whole way back in the bus or whatever conveyance, it'd be like, yeah, so that's kind of the bull stereotype this whole thing is trying to fight, so you're fighting the fight, good job. I mean, because this is the crap we face, you know. This is the crap, well, actually, for these kids, this is the crap that you face. This is what we're leaving you. Sorry.
A good spin doctor could turn that around and be like, well, actually, I was just doing it as a test to show them what the lobbying world is really like. I'm just trying to help them along like a mother.
Or like a pile of assholes.
There's that, too. I'm wondering if there's...
There's a poignant pause right after mother there.
I'm wondering if there is any group or legislator or individual who is not obsessed with virginity... based on religion. Is there anyone who is obsessed with the virgin status of a young woman, of a 17-year-old girl, who is not motivated by religion?
In a lot of situations, I've had my fair share of really stupid ideas in my time, and I try to use that to identify with religious people who maybe don't think their ideas are stupid, but their ideas are sometimes harmful. This is one I don't get. What's the deal?
With the obsession with purity and virgin status.
Yeah, all of these laws, all of this stuff, like the stuff in Missouri and all of these laws against women and the war on women stuff, it all seems to have this obsession with chastity and virginity and protecting her and basically referring to women as a natural resource.
I would say a commodity, but yeah.
Well, a commoditized national.
Yes.
We need a strategic reserve of virginity is basically what I'm suggesting that they think we need.
I am just kind of baffled by it as well. I mean, I understand that someone can be motivated not by religion to want to make sure that young people have the ability to make their choices not to engage in sexual activity, that they are not overly pressured by it, that they're not... I can even value an opinion that states that we have too much exposure to sex in our media and it's encouraging people to be more sexual. I can respect that position and that opinion. But the specific obsession with female virginity is something that I have not seen outside of religious circles.
Right. Nobody seems to really care about male virginity.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some things sometimes there's stuff on the other side too. Like, this one, not really.
Yeah. Boys will be boys, sow their wild oats or whatever.
Yeah. Sometimes in some cases, specifically in the religious cant, it's even "ha ha, you're a viral young whatever blah blah blah" and
virile.
No, I meant viral.
Oh, okay, all right.
especially if he's been sowing his oats. No, I don't know.
No,
that's why we need Planned Parenthood.
And we've come full circle.
Yes. No, usually I let Becky go on about the educational stuff, but this one just burns my gut. I hate this. I hate it when lawmakers use children's educational opportunities to burnish their political agenda. Mm. Anyway, speaking of politics, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case about whether a church can get taxpayer money for a playground. Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Missouri, sued the state after being rejected for a program that uses recycled tires to make soft surfaces in children's playgrounds. The church was rejected because of a Missouri law banning public funds from going to churches for any reason. Trinity claims that they were discriminated against because the playground is open to the public and doesn't serve a specific religious purpose.
I like that Missouri has a state program going to use a non-recyclable product to help, make playgrounds. That's pretty cool.
Question. So recycling good. Tires pick up a lot of toxic badness. I like this spongy blacktop stuff. It's great.
Yeah.
Is this a ecological net positive?
I would say it is, because the other opportunity for tires is to put them in the ocean or put them in piles and burn them.
Yeah.
And among the materials that are recycled, actually recycling tire rubber is one of the cleaner and less energy intensive.
No
so
kidding.
Recycling tires, it's a pretty old form of recycling, and it's one of the better ones. If you work on the waterfront, you'll see, along the fronts of every dock, every tugboat, everything that needs to protect something else from getting worn, you're going to see recycled tire rubber. And that's way better than just taking these tires and throwing them in the trash, throwing them in the landfill, or setting them on fire, which used to be a common practice.
Yeah.
That whole Springfield tire fire thing in The Simpsons isn't exactly an obscure joke. It's something that really used to be done.
I think we had that in Arizona when we lived there, Sam.
Yeah, we did. Not on purpose, though.
No, certainly not.
Because I figured, I do a bit of driving, and I've driven over some stuff that I wouldn't want my kids licking.
Sure.
So,
but, shoes do, too.
Well, right, but I always figured that that would make the recycling process for tires actually fairly leave a lot of toxic sludge.
Pretty much what's done is in the context of making playground materials, which in fact the playgrounds that I grew up playing on had recycled tires for the matting under the parallel bars and things like that.
Sure.
What's really done is they're they're rinsed, which takes off most of that stuff because rubber is fairly impermeable.
Right.
They're rinsed, they're shredded, they're heated up just warm enough to the point where it becomes malleable and then pressed together under pressure.
Right.
And it, you know, the stuff that is in the rubber, certainly in modern tires, is not as harmful as tires maybe produced in the 40s or 50s. There used to be a lot more lead usage in manufacturing tire rubber. Now it's pretty minor. The amounts of copper, pretty minor. A big concern used to be copper sulfate from tires. Now it's copper sulfates from brakes, but that's a whole other thing separate from this particular issue.
The copper cool sulfate thing, moved.
The cool thing about recycling tires, though, is that the stuff that may be in the tires that is toxic is fairly well sequestered.
Right.
And this we should make a distinction that this is different from the crumb rubber that's on soccer fields, because that is actually getting bounced up and then sometimes right. getting into kids' cuts or being mm-hmm. you know eaten accidentally. Yeah. And this is the spongy playmat that replaces your pea gravel or your mulch.
Bark chips. Yeah.
So if you're wondering why I'm avoiding the Supreme Court aspect of this and talking about. Talking about the science of this rubber stuff. One is, well, Dan's here, and I'm actually interested in that aspect of it. Is this is going to the Supreme Court? Becky, how do you feel about should the church get the money here?
I am divided on this one. Washington State's constitution has a similar clause that says that you can't have any public funds going to churches for any reason. It was one of the things that helped us fight within Pierce County, the allotment of any public funds going to the Good News Society,
yeah.
right? And it's it would be like... Well, if you had any nonprofit organization that says we want to build a playground and have it be open to the public, would that be something that's celebrated? And since under state law and federal law, churches at this point are considered nonprofits, would it be okay to reject this nonprofit and accept things from other nonprofits? I imagine that during the application process of this particular program, not every single group that applied for the new playground resurfacing got the grant. So it may just be an issue of that. But in terms of sticking to the state constitution or the state law saying we can't give any public funds to churches for any reason, I think that I'm in favor of keeping that and upholding that. I'm a little bit worried about what the Supreme Court will say.
I was going to hand that to right. Dan, a slightly different question. How do you think, with this Supreme Court, how do you think it's going to turn out?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, even personally, I could sort of go either way on the issue. I'm pro-park and pro-playground,
yeah.
Provided it's, you know, open to the public and not specific for... You know, this church's groups or this church's functions. If it was going to be a public place, then this church couldn't be holding their functions there. I don't know how many would be held on a playground anyway. But I guess the thing that concerns me is that let's say the Supreme Court decides to go with it and say, okay, you know, it's just a park, it's just a playground. Let's do this one time. Well, now we've got a precedent.
Right.
And that's the concerning part.
You see, if I would have done the way we talked about it in the pre-show is I would have signed a contract was like, if you use this space for any church reason, we can go after your property to recoup costs.
Right.
And because now we're breaking the law. But given the modern religious opinions on separation of church and state in the United States, I don't know that I would even be willing to give them that. But given that, I think it's is it Scalia that's fronting this one? Do you know who's?
Yeah, Scalia's given lectures saying he doesn't believe that there is a separation of church and state in the U.S.
I think he's leading this one, this particular trial, too. At least that's what I heard.
If that's the case, then I would be doubly concerned about that precedent.
Yeah, I don't like the way this one will turn out. But
all it takes is one footnote that has expansive mm-hmm. Rights granted at that point.
Pretty much. So to wrap up, we've got a... we got an atheist movie email from Eric from California. Just listened to the episode talking about the lack of atheist movies. I recommend Rabbit Hole, a movie about grieving, not about atheism, but the main characters are atheists, and I think it gives a very good example of how atheists react to tragedies. Spoiler, they're sad. Thank you, Eric.
I like that there's a movie that's not specifically about atheism, but has atheist characters.
Yeah.
I mean, someone's position on cosmology has a great impact on how they end up reacting to major events. And I think that that's really neat. I'm glad for this recommendation.
Sure. Yeah, I'll probably watch it. I haven't seen it, so I can't.
Oh, so we got another movie recommendation that nobody's seen. Yeah, okay.
Sure.
So I think we need to watch it. Maybe, you know, we've got a few of these. Maybe we need to do an episode where we all watch a couple before we do a show. Is that something we could do, you think? Or
I think so.
Maybe we could watch it in the studio and do like a Riff Tracks thing.
I don't know.
Much more fun to do Riff Tracks.
Did you ever see the first, and I don't know that I want to do a Riff Tracks of a movie about atheists grieving.
Oh, yeah.
Much more fun to do God's Not Dead.
That might be in poor taste, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd want to Riff Tracks any movie about grieving. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Except what was the one the one where in that takes place in the afterlife with Rip Torn in it?
Wait, Rip Torn.
Rip Torn's in it, isn't it?
The one I was thinking of that takes place in the afterlife, What Dreams May Come.
That's the one with Robin Williams. Yeah, takes place with Robin Williams and an SGI computer.
We're talking about the one with Robert Downey Jr. when he's like has like three ghosts angels with him.
No, not that one either.
That's A Christmas Carol.
Not that one.
Scrooged, I believe it's called.
That too.
We're all wrong. Yes. I can't remember what movie it is. But I think what I'm getting is a little bit undermined here is the point where atheists and they aren't horrible people and nothing bad happens. Well, then would it be a movie? I guess. I don't know. Because it'd be boring as like, hey, I'm an atheist. But like, you know what I want? I want like an 80s action movie where instead of I'm about to go kill a guy, the guy goes to talk to the priest about killing a guy. He goes to like, I don't know, a physicist or something. Not that that makes any sense. I just think that would be cool. And that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam. With me was Dan. Thank you very much, Dan. What?
Is that like 5 seconds? You should definitely go see a physicist before you go ballistic.
Yeah! Thanks, Dan. Thank you, Becky. I'd like to thank Jeremy a lot for taking care of the place while the master is away. And well, I always thank Dave. Jeez, I was getting there. I thought you were telling me somebody I didn't know. Yeah, thanks, Dave, for writing as usual. You can go to our website, askanatheist.tv. Email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Give us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Twitter us at AskAnAtheistWA. You can hit me up with Morse code at November 9, Mike India. Catch you next time.